Today is April the 16th, 2025. Welcome to the Personal Computer Show. I'm Hank Key. Big Tech has been collecting and aggregating your personal data. Do you know how big tech companies and our government are using your personal data? We have been bringing computer news, hardware and software reviews, guest interviews, and news of user group meetings for the past 40-plus years. The Personal Computer Show is a three-time winner of the prestigious National Computer Press Awards. Our only advocacies are consumerism and the First Amendment. I welcome you, the listeners, to provide feedback as to what you want to hear. Address your suggestions to Hank at PCRadioshow.org. Our website is PCRadioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.live, that's PRN.live, streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the program is available on PRN.live on the Internet. You can leave us a message with your questions or comment at Hank at PCRadioshow.org. China and the United States are rolling back selective tariffs on smartphones, computers, and semiconductors. There are tariffs, and, of course, there are tariffs. The recent developments in global trade policies have significantly impacted the tech and semiconductor industries. This past Saturday, there were two back-to-back tariff-related announcements. The United States are rolling back tariffs on smartphones and computers. China is rolling back selective tariffs on semiconductors. The global trade landscape saw two significant tariff-related announcements this past Saturday, April the 12th, 2025. These developments are poised to reshape the tech and semiconductor industries with implications for global supply chains and geopolitical dynamics. There is the U.S. rollback of tariffs on smartphones and computers. The United States announced the rollback of tariffs on smartphones and computers. This decision is expected to provide relief to tech companies like Apple, Dell, and HP, which rely heavily on global supply chains for manufacturing and assembly. Smartphones, computer monitors, and various electronic parts are among the exempted products. The exemption applies to products entering the United States or removed from warehouses as early as April the 5th, according to the notice. The move comes after the Trump administration imposed a minimum tariff rate of 145% on Chinese goods imported to the United States. The tariffs would have had a major impact on tech giant Apple, which makes the iPhone and other products in China. Roughly 90% of Apple's iPhone production and assembly is based in China, according to Wedbush Securities estimates. The removal of tariffs will likely prevent price hikes for popular consumer electronics, making devices like smartphones and laptops more affordable for U.S. consumers. Companies that were previously burdened by increased costs due to tariffs can now refocus on innovation and competitiveness in the global market. China, in a parallel move, announced a selective rollback of tariffs on semiconductors. However, this policy is highly strategic and favors Taiwan-based fabs while penalizing U.S. chipmakers. The China Semiconductor Industry Association published the rules for determining the country of origin of semiconductor products shipped to China. As it turns out, the location where the wafer was processed is deemed the country of origin, no matter where the chip was developed or packaged. According to a China Semiconductor Industry Association document published in WeChat and republished by various analysts, the rule applies to both packaged and unpackaged semiconductors. Because China deems Taiwan its own territory, chips fabricated by TSMC, Micron, UMC, Vanguard, and other chip makers in Taiwan will be exempt from punitive 125% import duties imposed on products from the United States, even though virtually all contemporary chips from companies like AMD, Broadcom, Intel, NVIDIA, Micron, and Qualcomm are developed in America and sold by U.S.-based company. What is interesting is Intel has a 14 to 16 semiconductor fabrication units 11 to 12 of them are located in the United States, and 3 to 4 of them are located in Ireland and Israel. TSMC operates a total of 9 fabrication units in Taiwan, and 4 units of which 1 is in mainland China and 3 are in the United States, 2 in Camas, Washington, and 1 in Phoenix, Arizona. Semiconductor products manufactured in Taiwan, such as those by TSMC, are exempt from the tariffs. This benefits companies like AMD, NVIDIA, and Qualcomm, which outsource their chip production to Taiwan. Since location where the wafer was produced is deemed a country of origin, no matter where the chip was developed or packaged, will be a challenge for the Chinese government. In effect, China may remove tariffs on all Intel semiconductor chips or apply tariffs on all Intel chips. Punitive tariffs on U.S. chip makers, such as the U.S.-based companies like Intel, GlobalFoundries, and Texas Instruments, face a 125% tariff on chips manufactured in the United States and imported into China. This makes their products significantly more expensive in the Chinese market. The steep tariffs reduce the competitiveness of U.S. manufactured chips in the Chinese market, which is a major consumer of semiconductors. Companies like Intel, which operates most of its fabs in the United States, may face pressure to shift manufacturing to overseas location to avoid tariffs. Taiwan fabs, particularly TSMC, gain a competitive edge as they remain exempt from the tariffs. This reinforces Taiwan's critical role in the global semiconductor supply chain. These tariff policies reflect escalating trade tensions between the United States and China, with semiconductors becoming a focal point of the chip war. U.S. firms may be forced to diversify their supply chains and reduce reliance on the Chinese market. The rollback on smartphones and computers by the United States provides immediate relief to the consumer electronics industry. Meanwhile, China's selective tariff rollback on semiconductors strategically favors Taiwan while penalizing U.S. chip makers, further intensify the geopolitical competition in the tech sector. These developments underscore the growing importance of semiconductor manufacturing in global trade and the shifting dynamics of supply chains. Windows 11 update finally lets you install on older PCs. Microsoft is making a surprising shift in its approach to Windows 11, and it's one that's being welcomed by many users. The latest update finally opens the door to installing Windows 11 on older PCs, which had previously been excluded due to the operating system's strict hardware requirements. This change is a relief for many users who were left behind when Windows 11 was first released. When Windows 11 launched, it did not exactly go off without a hitch. Microsoft introduced a set of stringent hardware requirements, including the need for TPM 2.0, which is the Trusted Platform Module and Modern Processors. These demands effectively left many older computers, even those that were still perfectly functional, unable to run the new system. The exclusion of these machines frustrated many users eager to try the latest features but who were not ready to part with their current devices. Many who tried to install it was immediately hit with an incompatible hardware message. Microsoft stood firm in its belief that security and performance were critical, and only systems meeting the strict hardware standards could ensure both. Despite Microsoft's reasoning, the limitations did not sit well with users. By mid-2023, Windows 11 had only captured just over 20% of the market, while Windows 10 still dominated with almost 70%. The numbers spoke for themselves. Many people were either reluctant or unable to make the jump to the new operating system. Now, Microsoft is taking a different direction. With Windows 10 nearing its end of life in 2025, and more specifically, October the 14th of this year, the company has relaxed its hardware requirements for Windows 11. This move is a big deal for users who have been hanging onto older, yet reliable machines, as it gives them the opportunity to upgrade and enjoy the new system without needing to replace their hardware. The updated policy means that older, processors, once deemed to be outdated, are now eligible to run Windows 11. While Microsoft is still focused on security, and rightly so, this decision acknowledges that many people aren't ready to part with their current PCs and should not have to. The decision to allow more PCs to run Windows 11 isn't just about broadening access, it's also about cybersecurity. As Windows 10 approaches its end, users will soon be exposed to unpatched security vulnerabilities if they continue using the outdated system. By enabling more devices to upgrade, Microsoft is ensuring that a larger number of users benefit from the latest security updates and features. This change also signals a larger shift in Microsoft's philosophy. The company seems to be moving towards a more inclusive approach, balancing cutting-edge technology with accessibility. After all, a truly successful operating system is one that can be used by a wide range of users, not just those with the latest hardware. If your PC was previously deemed incompatible with Windows 11, this update could be a game changer. With the relaxed hardware requirements, you might now be able to upgrade and enjoy features like the redesigned start menu, better multitasking capabilities, and improve Microsoft Teams integration. That said, it's still a good idea to double-check whether the device is truly ready for the upgrade. While Microsoft has eased the hardware demands, older machines might still struggle with the performance or lack compatibility with some of the more advanced features. So before hitting that upgrade button, it's worth taking a moment to review your system specs. Microsoft's decision to ease restrictions for Windows 11 is undoubtedly a win for users, and it marks a positive step forward for the company. By allowing more older PCs to join the Windows 11 fold, Microsoft isn't just boosting adoption rates, they're reaffirming their commitment to making modern technology accessible to as many people as possible. If you've been putting off upgrading, now might be the perfect time to reconsider. With this move, Microsoft is making the future of computing more inclusive. If you've been waiting to make the leap, now is the time to explore everything Windows 11 has to offer. Whether you're an old pro or a first-time upgrader, this new flexibility could finally make your eons old PC ready for tomorrow's technology. Neptune Rat, which is a sophisticated malware, is targeting Windows PC through platforms like YouTube and Telegram. This rat steals passwords, hijacks crypto wallets, and demands ransom. Users should exercise caution when downloading files. Use strong antivirus protection and back up their data to mitigate the risk. A new highly dangerous malware known as Neptune Rat is spreading across the internet. It can infect Windows PCs through platforms like YouTube, Telegram, and GitHub. This remote access Trojan has become a major concern for the users worldwide, mainly because they can steal passwords, hijack crypto wallets, and even demand ransom. How can you stay safe? Is there more to it than just being vigilant? Here's everything you need to know about this malware and how to protect your device from it. Neptune Rat is one of the most advanced types of malware to date. Unlike traditional malware, this rat goes beyond stealing basic information. It can secretly access your device, spy on you, and perform malicious actions without being detected by the best antivirus software. Well, how does Neptune Rat work? Cyber criminals are using Neptune Rat to target Windows PCs in several dangerous ways. The malware has a wide range of capabilities. Neptune Rat can track cryptocurrency transactions. It replaces wallet addresses with those controlled by attackers. This can redirect your funds without your knowledge. The malware is designed to steal login details from over 270 applications. These include popular web browsers like Chrome. The stolen credentials can give attackers access to your social media accounts, online banking, and more. Neptune Rat also includes a ransomware component. It can encrypt your files and demand payments to release them. Imagine the major disruptions it may cause. The rat can turn off Windows Defender and other antivirus programs. This makes it especially challenging for users to detect and remove the infection. Attackers can watch your screen in real time, tracking everything you do. This can lead to blackmail or other forms of data exploitation. If attackers decide they are done with the malware, Neptune Rat can destroy all data on your system, all without leaving any kind of trace behind. Where is Neptune Rat spreading? Neptune Rat is being spread through common online platforms. You can easily find it on even the most trusted portals like GitHub, Telegram, and YouTube. Attackers may upload infected files or share dangerous links. Often, users are unsuspectingly of such links on trusted platforms. As a result, you may click on them to use them. Therefore, it is important to be cautious when downloading anything from these sites. While Neptune Rat is spreading rapidly, there are several steps you can take to protect your Windows PC and personal information. Of course, it all comes down to being vigilant, and, well, here are a few tips that might help you. Be cautious on download platforms. Avoid downloading files or clicking links from GitHub, Telegram, and YouTube unless you trust the source completely. Always verify the content before interacting with it. This is a standard practice which will always help you. Use strong antivirus protection. Ensure your antivirus software is up to date. While Neptune Rat is known to disable some antivirus tools, having a reliable protection system can still help detect suspicious activity. Make sure to run the scans whenever you can. Try to opt for premium options, even though Windows Defender is more than sufficient. Consider purchasing identity theft protection. Many services offer fund recovery and insurance that can be beneficial if you fall victim to the malware. These plans can help replace your PC or recover lost funds. Back up your data. Regularly back up your files to ensure you don't lose important data if your system is infected. It would be a great practice to use a hard drive and save all your data there. While cloud computing is a fantastic facility, it is better to have copies in your physical storage devices. Why is Neptune Rat so dangerous? The biggest threat to Neptune Rat is its stealthy nature. It can bypass many security measures and hide in plain sight, thus making it difficult for even the most skilled cybersecurity experts to detect. This makes it a particularly dangerous tool for cybercriminals. Moreover, the malware is versatile. Whether it steals cryptocurrency, passwords, or demands a ransom, Neptune Rat poses a major risk to both individual users and businesses. Android is set to introduce a new security feature. Android will automatically restart devices if they remain locked for 3 consecutive days. This update is part of the latest Google Play Services enhancements aimed at improving device security. Devices will require users to enter their PIN after 3 days of inactivity. Android is launching this new security feature that will force devices to reboot themselves if you haven't unlocked them for a while, making it harder for other people to access the data inside. The feature included in the latest Google Play Services update says that Android phones will automatically restart if locked for 3 consecutive days, requiring users to enter their passcode the next time they want to open the device. This measure is designed to protect personal data from unauthorized access, particularly in scenarios where the device might be lost or stolen. This update should apply to both Android phones and tablets, but will exclude other device categories like auto, TV, and Wear OS. The reboot function, not to be confused with a device reset that returns it to factory settings, put phones and tablets into a before first unlock, that's BFU, before first unlock state that encrypts data files and disables biometric login support until the device PIN has been entered. This feature enhances security by making it more difficult for anyone to access the data without the proper credentials. Users should be aware that after the reboot, they will need to enter their passcode to regain access. Apple introduced a similar iPhone inactivity reboot feature in iOS 18.1 that triggers a device restart after 4 days of being locked. Google was asked to clarify when the Google Play Services 25.14 update will be rolling out and which Android devices will support the new auto reboot feature. These Android feature drops can typically take a week or two to appear. It's unclear if devices will notify users why automatic reboot has occurred, so Android phones already display a message on the PIN screen if users need to enter their passcode to fully unlock the device after a reboot. American Airlines to introduce free Wi-Fi. American Airlines is rolling out free Wi-Fi. It will soon offer free Wi-Fi on most of its flights, becoming the latest major carrier to add the perk. Beginning in January 2026, members of the airline's free loyalty program will have access to the perk. Wi-Fi will be available on 90% of its fleet, with American announcing in a press release that it will offer internet on more planes than any other domestic carrier. American was one of the few U.S.-based airlines still charging for Wi-Fi, with prices ranging from $10 for a flight to $599 for an annual pass, according to its website. The carrier said it tested the strength of its free Wi-Fi on some routes and discovered that it had surpassed performance expectations. Delta Airlines added free Wi-Fi on most flights in 2023, and United Airlines recently announced that its free internet will be powered by Elon Musk's Starlink, with some of its fleet equipped by the end of this year, before eventually rolling out to every plane. JetBlue pioneered the perk, offering it since 2013. Internet on any airline has long been plagued by complaints for its inconsistent speeds. However, efforts by a host of satellite providers and airlines have helped the technology evolve significantly in the past decade. American said that AT&T will sponsor the service, helping to offset the cost by installing the planes with the necessary equipment. In-flight internet has been available since 2003 when plane maker Boeing announced its service, Connexion, that's Connexion. Boeing discontinued the service in 2006 after the market had not materialized as expected. This move comes as American Airlines faces increasing pressure to provide complimentary Wi-Fi, a service that many other airlines have already adopted. The airline had previously indicated it had no plans to introduce free Wi-Fi, but recent developments suggested a change in strategy as they begin testing free in-flight internet service on select routes. Overall, this change is expected to enhance the flying experience for passengers, making it easier to stay connected while traveling. Presenting the IT Pro Series with Benjamin Rockwell.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and IT, and all of that. Ryan reached out to me. I keep hearing that IT jobs pay well, and I've also heard that if you're just in it for the money, you aren't going to get far. Is that true? All right, so this is something that we've been discussing in the industry for a while. Getting into IT just for a paycheck, just for the big paycheck, is trying to become the next Gordon Ramsay just because you like eating. Yes, the money can be good if you get up to the top, but the people who truly thrive, the ones who are raking in all the cash, aren't just there for the salary. They're the ones who genuinely love technology. They're the ones who they go forth. They've been tinkering for years, experimenting, and they have been solving problems on their own, because they can't help themselves. They just are fascinated by it. They're passionate about it. And passion will beat a paycheck chaser every single time. If you are someone who lives and breathes technology, and you're not just showing up for a 9-to-5, it doesn't mean you have to stick to working all kinds of crazy hours. There's plenty of jobs in IT that allow for a fairly normal schedule, but there are times where you will wind up working in the wee hours of the morning. So you have to be someone who really enjoys the entire realm of IT. If you're there just to get rich in tech, you're going to be competing against other people who are actually obsessed with programming, with automation, with debugging, all of these different items just for fun. And employers, good employers, can tell if someone is just going through the motions versus someone who really gets really nerdy about it and they love solving those complex issues. Now we get even deeper into this in that the best paying roles, the ones that are going to really return on your investment, they require a very deep specialized knowledge. I'm going to go with one particular segment of the industry, cybersecurity. And if you want a high-paying cybersecurity job, you're going to be the type who enjoys tearing apart systems just to see how they work. You're going to be the person who sits there and looks at malware and goes, oh, wow, as much as it's bad, it's really cool to see how they did this. And there's a fine line there. And this is something where you have to get into a lot of various specialty items. You get into these what are called white hat hacking courses, and even into you'll take courses on gray hat and black hat, but only to build your knowledge of what the bad guys do. I've talked with some of the cybersecurity folks over my career, and it's always a fun, fascinating conversation with them because they see a lot of different things of where all of this can go wrong, and they are working hard to protect all of us from those bad guys. Another thing too here is that tech is constantly changing, and it changes fast. I mean, 2 years ago, most of us were not really talking about AI. The few that were already using it and checking it out. I was one of those. I was very fascinated by it, having been fascinated by this idea of the language model, and now it's the large language model, and eventually it'll evolve beyond that. But I've been fascinated by that since early programs like there's one called Eliza from way back in the day. And what we see now is just a further advancement on that. So tech changes, and these days it's evolving at warp speed. Casual interest in this is just not going to cut it. You're going to have to be training constantly, doing deep dives into all of these different new frameworks, the scripting languages, and even just the basic general tech trends. You're going to have to be doing that on your own time. If you are not a truly self-starter, a self-learner, if you don't enjoy troubleshooting and problem-solving, you are going to be stuck in some of these mid-level jobs while all of the nerds are just flying by you. And there are going to be a lot of different things that come with this, along with the fact that you have to be able to not only do all of this, but you have to communicate well. You have to be able to go through and explain this, manage it, make business cases for all of the different things you're doing in technology. And you have to be able to do this with people who don't even understand tech. So you have to be into it to a very, very deep level. If you don't, if you are not one of these people, yes, you can burn out. And this is because it's not glamorous. It is not one of those things that I would suggest for the faint of heart. Yes, we do have outages. We have different troubleshooting things that we have to do. We have to find our joy in the problem solving, the puzzle solving issues of technology, even during the point where those things go wrong. If you can't handle that, if you are just in it to get a paycheck, you're not going to get very far, both in the industry, but also, I'm afraid, probably in life as well. This is Benjamin Rockwell. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. Converting a doorstop PC into an anonymous PC. What is a doorstop PC? Well, a doorstop PC is a colloquial term used to describe a computer that is outdated, non-functional, or no longer in use, often relegated to a state where it serves no purpose other than to prop open the door. This term humorously highlights the idea that the computer is so obsolete that it has lost its value as a functional device and is instead used as a physical object to hold the door open. Essentially, a doorstop PC symbolizes a piece of technology that has been rendered useless in its intended role. Well, we can convert a doorstop PC into an anonymous PC. Set it up to be a privacy and security hardened PC for surfing the web. If you think you'll be potentially surfing into a risky internet neighborhood, a knockoff shopping site, a little known streaming service, or somewhere you're just not entirely sure it's legit, and you have a spare laptop lying around, you can always repurpose it to become what I call an anonymous PC, a laptop hardened for additional privacy and security. If the doorstop PC was purchased 2015 or later, you can do a factory reset from the hidden partition to reinstall Windows 10 or 11 with either Home or Pro. What you also need is a VPN subscription. With Windows 10 or Windows 11 Pro, it has a Windows Sandbox feature. For Windows 10 or Windows 11 Home, there is the equivalent available with Hyper-V, Sandboxy, and VirtualBox or VMware that can be installed separately. Sandbox creates a virtualized environment with a minimal setup. Essentially, it's a Windows PC within your PC, protected by a moat that isolates it from your PC. Once you close Sandbox, the entire PC and anything it has within it is erased permanently. That includes any malware that may have wormed its way in. Once you enable Sandbox, Windows will update itself with the appropriate features, reboot, and open up Windows again. Sandbox essentially creates a PC environment within a window, but it's a generic PC you don't need to log in. It's a good idea in almost any case to use an account without administrator access for additional security and possibly a local account at that. VPNs can be used to access content in other countries, avoid the eyes of authoritarian governments, privately chat with friends, and so on. It's akin to locking your door and drawing your shades, and most people do that in the real world. Running a VPN won't necessarily protect the Sandbox PC from malware, but it does add an additional layer of anonymity protection. Some VPNs also include upgraded antivirus. You might be able to get away with running a VPN outside Sandbox. Once you've installed Sandbox and a VPN, you're done. You can begin exploring some of the shadier parts of the web. Feel free, of course, to install other software. Pay attention to what environment your cursor is in. If you absentmindedly open Edge in the standard desktop environment, that browser windows lack all of your Sandbox protections and probably the VPNs as well. In my case, I use Opera as the browser in the Sandbox. Opera has the VPN function built in. In the worst case, where Sandbox PC becomes noticeably infected, you can simply close Sandbox down by closing the window. You receive a notification that this will erase everything within the Sandbox environment. All you need to do is open a new version of Sandbox, which will be pristine and untouched. You'll then need to reload Opera and any other software. Security professionals, of course, will have more sophisticated protection available to them, but for the average surfer, this provides some strong additional protection. Windows Sandbox is a feature in Windows 10 and 10.11 that allows users to run untrusted applications in a secure environment. It operates as a disposable virtual machine, ensuring that any changes made during its use do not affect the main operating system. When the sandbox is closed, all software files and states are deleted, providing a clean slate for each session. Hyper-V is a built-in virtualization technology in Windows Pro editions. While it is more complex to set up than Windows Sandbox, it allows for the creation of full virtual machines that can run different operating systems. Hyper-V is suitable for users who need more control and flexibility over their virtual environments. Sandboxy is a third-party application that creates a sandbox environment for running applications. Unlike Windows Sandbox, which is integrated into the operating system, Sandboxy allows for more customization and can be used to isolate applications without the need for a full virtual machine. VirtualBox or VMware are popular third-party virtualization tools that can create isolated environments for running different operating systems. They require more resources and setup compared to Windows Sandbox, but offer extensive features for users needing advanced virtualization capabilities. While Windows Sandbox is a straightforward and efficient option for running untrusted applications, alternatives like Hyper-V, Sandboxy, and third-party virtualization tools like VirtualBox and VMware provide additional functionalities for users with different needs. Upgrading Windows 10 to Windows 11 is going down a rabbit hole. With the continuing incremental changes to hardware requirements and the ever-continuing stream of software fixes and enhancements, upgrading from Windows 10 to Windows 11 has proven to be a challenging process for many users, largely due to incremental changes in hardware requirements and software support. While Microsoft has positioned Windows 11 as a more secure and modern operating system, the evolving requirements have created confusion and frustration for users. Strict minimum requirements for Windows 11 introduce stricter hardware requirements compared to Windows 10. The inclusion of TPM 2.0 and UEFI, which is UEFI, secure boot as mandatory features has been a significant hurdle for users with older hardware. Microsoft justifies these requirements by emphasizing the security benefits, such as protection against firmware attacks and support for stronger cryptographic algorithms. Microsoft has allowed users to install Windows 11 on unsupported hardware, but with caveats. Devices that do not meet the minimum requirements may face instability, lack of updates, and no official support. With updates like Windows 11 24H2, there are reports of additional hardware requirements being introduced, such as support for newer processors. However, some legacy features like BIOS support have been reintroduced to the Internet of Things Enterprises editions. Some third-party software may refuse to run on configurations that do not meet Windows 11's hardware security requirements, creating further complications for users with older systems. Microsoft has been rolling out frequent updates to address bugs, improve performance, and enhance security. However, these updates sometimes introduce new issues requiring further patches. Users who upgrade their hardware to meet Windows 11 requirements may need to manually initiate system assessments to ensure compatibility, adding another layer of complexity. Upgrading from Windows 10 to Windows 11 can feel like going down a rabbit hole due to the continuously evolving hardware requirements and software support challenges. While Microsoft has made efforts to improve security and performance, the stricter requirements and incremental changes have created a steep learning curve for many users. For those considering the upgrade, it is essential to carefully review their compatibility and be prepared for potential adjustments or limitations. Upgrading hardware for Windows 11 is a short-lived effort. Upgrading your hardware to meet Windows 11 minimum requirements may indeed feel like a temporary solution, especially given Microsoft's trajectory of frequent updates and evolving hardware recommendations. While the current requirements are relatively strict, further enhancements and features may render older hardware obsolete sooner than expected. These requirements already exclude many older devices, forcing users to upgrade the hardware to remain compatible. Then the frequent software fixes and enhancements. Microsoft's ongoing updates for Windows 11 include security patches to address vulnerabilities, performance improvements to optimize the operating system for newer hardware, feature updates that introduce advanced capabilities, often requiring more powerful hardware. While these updates improve the user experience, they also increase the strain on older systems, potentially making them less viable over time. The push for NPUs, which is the neural processing unit, and AI integration is what Microsoft has been signaling, a shift towards integrating neural processing units into future hardware requirements. NPUs are specialized processors designed to handle AI workloads efficiently, such as real-time language translation, image recognition, and other machine learning tasks. Further requirements, while Windows 11 does not currently require an NPU, Microsoft is expected to recommend NPUs with a minimum TOPS, which is trillions of operations per second, rating of 40 for optimal performance in AI-driven features. Earlier announcement by Microsoft for TOPS rating was single digit. Now the rating of 40 for optimal performance is needed in AI-driven features. This aligns with the company's broader focus on AI integration across its ecosystem. Then there's the impact on older hardware devices without NPUs or with lower TOPS rating, which you might have purchased as part of a Windows 11 configuration, may struggle to support these advanced features, further accelerating the need for hardware upgrades. Upgrading your hardware to meet Windows 11's current requirements may only provide a short-term solution, as Microsoft's frequent updates and focus on AI-driven features will likely necessitate further hardware advancements. The anticipated push for NPUs with high TOPS rating underscores this trend, making it increasingly challenging for older equipment to keep up. Users should weigh the cost of incremental upgrades against the potential benefit of investing in future-proof hardware. If you need to buy a computer today, buy what you need today. Don't worry about tomorrow, because tomorrow has yet to be defined on a continuing basis by Microsoft. Presenting Technology Chatter with Benjamin Rockwell and Marty Winston.
Marty Winston joins me now. And Marty, what do you have for us this week?
This is one of the most interesting lights that I've seen in a long time.
Lights, okay.
In studio land, there's a thing called a Big Soft. Are you familiar with that?
Mm-hmm, yeah. I went to college for radio and television broadcasting, so yeah.
Did you finish?
I plead the fifth.
You plead the fifth?
Yeah.
I think I emptied one. That was my college. a big soft is a light that initially had a tent behind it and kind of a puffy white thing in the front. Mm-hmm. So whatever light you put in there was totally diffused. It had no single point of origin. So the light that it cast was like the light you get from a cloud. It's very even. It's very flattering. It does not have the shadows that are usually created. So wrinkles kind of soften and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, Brightline Lighting has a light called Zello, Z-E-L-O. Okay. Only one L. I know you're going to want to say Jello or Hello or something. It's only one L, Z-E-L-O.
Yeah.
They call it a desktop studio light. It can be, but I have to tell you, I've tried this thing. It is like you squeeze a big soft light into the size of a sub sandwich.
Okay.
It's really good lighting. If you're doing Teams or Zoom or that kind of thing, you've never looked that good on camera.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these could be a boon to tons of people for a lot of different activities. I mean, you ought to see how well they're built. Of course, Zello, if you look up the word, means impassioned ardor. Woohoo! Like zealot. I mean, okay. It's from the same root. The original purpose of these was for those remote connected broadcasts during and after mm-hmm. the pandemic. You know, have an expert who's going to, and it always looks like a library, but the fire never moves. You've seen those
things. Yeah.
Right. Well, they thought, okay, we'll plug them in. We'll put one on each side of their notebook and one up higher, and we'll have great light. And they did. But they didn't need all of those because mm-hmm. big softs, you only need one, and it's over the top, and you're done. You can put it on both sides if you want to dimensionalize the face a little more. But without shadows, you're not gaining that much. You're just mm-hmm. having a brighter face. So
sure.
Here's this flexible light. When it originally came out, it was about $250 each.
Mm-hmm.
And you could do things with it at a coffee table that you couldn't make happen in a remote studio without a lot more money in those days. So
yeah.
They got kind of popular in broadcast and professional studios and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's for us, too. If you're on Zoom or Teams meetings, mm-hmm. it's terrific. Yeah. If you're just taking snapshots of the dog or the family or that food on the plate,
mm-hmm.
everything gets kind of that photo studio treatment.
Yes. As a matter of fact, the soft light that you're talking about, a lot of people have seen them the last time they went to a professional photographer.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Now, this thing it comes with a base plate, so you're not going to rock it. It's mm-hmm. got a control pod at the bottom where you can slide the color temperature mm-hmm. between mm-hmm. the almost amber candlelight 2700 degree, really warm temperature, all the way up to full sunlight 6500 Kelvin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's very useful. It's got a color rendering index, meaning how faithful is the color of over 96.
That's some quality LEDs there. Okay, yeah.
And for all of that, it's 1,300 lumens, which is just in the range of equivalent of a 100-watt bulb.
Yeah, that's good.
So your eyes aren't going to want to retreat just because the thing's on. It's very friendly. Now, I love 4,100 because all of the colors are natural at 4,100 Kelvin. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you're wearing makeup or you're judging the color of a fabric or any of that thing, mm-hmm. you can go either way if you want to, but for putting on makeup, for presenting jewelry, for looking at clothing, for previewing what's in the closet you're going to wear tonight, I would put this right there. This light, this big soft light that is flattering but covers everything like a paint gun. I mean, this thing is terrific. So if you're coloring your hair or nails, you're selecting jewelry or furniture or carpeting, mm-hmm, taking mm-hmm. photos of pets or kids, a lot of things. This is a color faithful view. Now, to add to that, it's made in the USA. What's the tariff on that, everybody?
That's really good. Yeah.
By Brightline Lighting. And you can right now, I said it was $250. And these days, it's about $160 at brightlines.com.
Very cool. We have under a minute left, but what could you say to get people to really hit home, to really care about the color of lighting? I've struggled over the years trying to explain that.
Oh, I've been able to show people that what looks like a brown sweater may change to orange or green, depending on the light and depending on the fabric. I can show you how the blush on your cheek that looked like it was a great fit at candlelight temperatures looks like you went through a spray and wash. skin tones, fabric tones, those are the number one reason to get those things right. And if you're looking at a photo with the kids, If the kid's got blue eyes or brown eyes and you're adjusting that photo for the tint on the skin under the wrong light, your eyes will turn the wrong color. So getting it right, that's why you choose the right color temperature of light.
Very cool. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin, and thank you, Marty. Public service announcements. Computer club meetings in the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut tri-state region. Log on to the club website for more information on remote meeting ID. The Brookdale Computer Users Group meets Thursday, April the 24th. Meeting time is 6:45 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. Website is bcug.com. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey meets Friday, May the 2nd. Meeting time is 8 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Jitsi. Website is acgnj.org. Tech Ed Connect meets Tuesday, May the 6th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. and it will be a hybrid meeting. Meeting at the Scarsdale Public Library, located at 54 Olmsted Road in Scarsdale, New York, and online virtual meeting via Zoom. Website is wpcug.org. The New York Amateur Computer Club meets Thursday, May the 8th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom, and the website is nyacc.org. The Long Island Macintosh Users Group meets Friday, May the 9th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom, and the website is limac.org. The King's Byte Computer Club meets Tuesday, May the 13th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. at the Park Plaza Restaurant, 220 Cadman Plaza West in Brooklyn, and the phone number to confirm, the number is 347-278-7320. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN, live streaming on the Internet. Podcast of the program is available on prn.live on the Internet. If you have any questions for us, just send us an email addressed to hank@pcradioshow.org. In the meantime, stay in touch and remember to do regular backups. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Michael Horowitz, Benjamin Rockwell, and Marty Winston, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and healthy until we meet again, same time, same station next week.